afternoon. It's Tuesday, November 4th, 2003, and coming to you live from WGMU in George Mason University, Fairfax, Virginia, this is Conflict.
I just think the whole group dynamic, being in a relaxed setting and just, you know, kind of having having a conversation about conflict. You know, how do you deal with conflict? What are some of the ways you cope with conflict, and how does it impact your life?
I remember just thinking immediately, I need to take a deep breath, and I pulled from my toolbox those five propositions and thought, yeah, this can turn out better. I know what the outcome is that I want, and blowing off steam and making him feel bad isn't going to get me that outcome.
Good afternoon, and welcome to Episode 10 of Conflict, Radio for Resolution. I'm Sean Dunning. Today, we revisit the most fundamental questions about conflict. What is it? How can we better understand it? And how can that understanding make a real difference? Instead of asking these questions outright, however, we are going to learn about an exciting new initiative that enables individuals and groups all over the place to have their own discussions. It is called simply A Conversation About Conflict. And today, we are so very fortunate to have with us here in the studio two of the leaders of the Conversation Project, founder Carol Frampton and coordinator Kate Levanche. Not only will we hear all about the project from Carol and Kate, who both serve as facilitators, we will also get the inside perspective from a couple of folks who have actually participated in conversations themselves. They will share some reflections as well as examples of how their recent dialogues have already made a positive difference in their lives. Most importantly, Carol and Kate will share how anyone who wants to can get involved in this exciting new concept. Now, without any further ado, let's hear from our guests. Carol Frampton and Kate Levanche, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, Sean. It's great to be here.
Well, we've got a lot to talk about today, and I'm really excited to have you on the program. This is a fascinating new initiative, Conversations About Conflict, and we're going to hear all about it. But why don't we go ahead and start off, and if you guys could just introduce yourself a little bit.
Right. My name is Carol Frampton, and I'm the Outreach Director for Search for Common Ground, which is an NGO dedicated to the prevention and resolution of conflict worldwide.
And I'm Kate Levanche, and I've had the fortunate opportunity to work with Carol on this project. I'm a mediator and consultant and do work out of New York, a little bit north of New York City. So I'm pleased to be here with you in person in Washington.
Again, it's great to have you. Why don't we start off, and if you could tell our listeners just in a very general sense, what is a conversation about conflict? And that's with a capital C and another capital C.
Well, it's exactly what the title says. It is just a conversation. Just to explain maybe a little bit how we came to this idea is that we realized that we can talk about conflict resolution. Very few people actually know what conflict resolution is, but very few people even have a concept of what conflict is. They don't really think about how we deal with conflict as an issue in itself. And our vision was to promote cooperative approaches to conflict, conflict resolution, alternative dispute resolution, all these different processes and skills that help us with conflict. But we realized, well, we have to first start by having a conversation about conflict before we can promote these approaches. And that's how the very first idea of this conversation came about. And it's basically a kind of a dialogue or facilitated discussion that lasts about an hour to 2 hours on the issues of conflict, an opportunity for people to get their head around the idea of conflict, how they deal with it, their personal experiences of it.
I think what Carol said about personal experiences is really the key to this, and why so many people who have participated have been so engaged in the dialogue, and they don't want it to stop, you know. It's really, we're so inundated, particularly these days, with conflict around the world. I mean, any time you turn the news on, it's on, you know, nonstop 24 hours a day. And the conversation about conflict actually gives us an opportunity to step back and look at conflict in our own lives, how it impacts us, you know, in our communities, with our families, in our workplaces. And I think it really provides people who may feel somewhat helpless in impacting what's going on in the world, you know, giving them actually some hope and some ability to maybe impact how conflict's handled it in their own life, which will impact in the world ultimately.
Mm-hmm. It starts with the individual.
Absolutely. Right. Yeah.
Now, just to back up a little bit, this is the conversation about conflict and the Common Ground Partnership one and the same?
Well, the Common Ground Partnership is the kind of outreach program of Search for Common Ground. Search for Common Ground is a large non-governmental organization that has sort of different programs all over the world that to help adversarial parties to deal with their differences and the conflict in a more cooperative way using the sports, the media, the arts. And so we have all these programs all over the world, but we realize, wait a minute, it would be so much better if we were not even needed, if people could didn't have to resort to violence and could know how to deal with their differences before they degenerate into a violent conflict or a civil war. And so we sort of say, well, we need to become better at talking about what we've learned over these many years. We've been around for 21 years, better at sharing what we have, the skills and the tools of what we call our toolbox. And that's where the vision of the Common Ground Partnership came about, to sort of educate, although I don't like that word, but sort of raise awareness about how we deal with conflict and the consequences of not dealing with conflict in a skillful or cooperative, constructive way, and get people maybe a little bit more aware of the issues and the cost of badly managed conflict.
Mm-hmm.
And so the conversation is one of the things that we designed to sort of help that, to sort of promote that awareness and try to make conflict and the way we deal with it as an important conversation to sort of create awareness around it.
And even the word conflict, I mean, when you say it, I'm sure all your listeners, each person probably has a different
right,
image
right.
of what that is. So one of the things that we do in the conversation about conflict is actually talk about that, you know, what conflict means to different people. You know, some people have grown up in their life with conflict all the time, and it's a very natural kind of easy thing, and they get it, you know, they yell and get it resolved, then the next, you know, hour it's gone. Other people, you know, conflict's not been something that, like disagreements have not been something that have been done out in the open, and so there's, you know, they've kind of been pushed back. So there are all different kinds of impressions and perceptions and beliefs about conflict that people bring to the table. And even a discussion about that is actually very interesting and exciting, and it helps people get insights on how things are going now, you know, in terms of what they bring to the table and in terms of their family history and experiences they've had in their past.
So, you know, just from listening to you, it sounds like this is a very valuable insight to have and to understand the complexity and also the diversity in terms of how different people are affected by it and what it means for one person and not another. But, you know, how is it that this conversation occurs? Is this a lecture format? Do you tell people these things? Or what exactly does a conversation look like?
It's really a conversation. So it's to a large extent sort of shaped by the experiences, the interests, the anecdotes of the participants. But we start with a questionnaire that each participant sort of fills in and then discuss with his or her neighbor on that helps them evaluate the conflict culture within their family and their work environment or social environment if it's students. And that already sort of brings home a few insights and sort of, wait a minute, you know, actually it's actually not that safe for me to bring up emotions, or it's not that often that I feel satisfied after a conflict. So then that sort of kicks up the conversation in a very nice way, we find. And then once we've debriefed that evaluation, self-evaluation, We then move on to sort of larger issues and questions on the nature of conflict, first experiences of conflict, immediate association with conflict, and that's where we can talk a little bit more about people's sort of deep inner beliefs and perception of conflict and how that affects how they deal with their everyday problems.
And then we also talk about current conflicts that they're experiencing.
Mm-hmm.
And really the group offers to each other ideas about what has worked for them and what hasn't, and situations, they share situations and they learn from each other, you know. We find that that dealing with conflict successfully is like building a muscle, you know, going to the gym and working out and building a muscle. It's something that we don't necessarily inherently have because our society hasn't actually set us up in that way. You know, generally there's a win-lose, somebody wins, somebody loses kind of mentality. And so to really offer people options and help them start exploring how they might be able to shift that and support each other in shifting that is something that I think folks get a lot out of, too.
But we're very careful not to set ourselves up as the expert. It has to be, it's a completely interactive dialogue. We bring in a few ideas, what we call food for thoughts or ideas to consider. One of them being that conflict is not necessarily a bad thing. A lot of people associate it with necessarily violence and sort of the negative consequences of a badly managed conflict. So we sort of bring out on the table, well, maybe conflict is not either negative or positive in itself. It's how you deal with it that will bring positive or negative consequences. And we just throw that in the group if it hasn't been brought up by a participant, which often happens. And so it's very important that people don't feel lectured. If people want to know more, then we refer them to training courses and whatever resources exist in that community, in that city. But we're just there to start the conversation, prompt the interest, challenge people a little bit, and give them a safe space to get their head around this. Again, for many people, this is a conversation they've never had.
Mm-hmm. You know, I'm curious. It seems to me that participating in a conversation like this, it sounds like kind of a risky proposition. I mean, I would feel perhaps that I'd have to make myself very vulnerable to share these experiences about how I've dealt with conflict in my life and for other people to be able to hear that. I mean, it sounds like there's issues of confidentiality, and it just sounds like it's not a lighthearted conversation. Have you experienced challenges with participants? Have they been willing to share? Is it, you know, can you say a little bit about that?
Yes. Conflict is uncomfortable for people generally. So we know that going in. And what we have tried to do with the conversations is really create a very safe, comfortable space for people to share. But it's totally up to them how much or how little they want to share.
So it's not like you go around the circle and every person has to answer the question.
Absolutely not. It's only people who want to volunteer. Now, we do have times in the conversation where people turn to their neighbor and talk, but they can do it at a very superficial level, or they can share something, you know, that's a little bit deeper and more meaningful to them. It's totally up to them. So it's and the confidentiality, we say at the beginning, you know, everyone is agreed to kind of protect the confidentiality in the group. And so and in all the conversations that I've facilitated, there was only one circumstance where it was a work environment and people had to be there as a staff meeting. And there were all kinds of levels and they didn't know each other. And it was a little bit difficult. And I think a few people felt uncomfortable. But as I said, it's an uncomfortable issue. And even feeling uncomfortable about it, those folks walked away and on their feedback forms, they indicated that they really got a lot out of it. But generally, in virtually every other situation, folks have really gotten engaged. I mean, it's great to be able to talk about things in your life. You know, it's really, we don't often get the opportunity to do that. And in some cases, if you're with strangers, sometimes it actually makes it a little easier. So in some groups, even strangers have a very easy time, like in Philadelphia over the weekend. The conversation flowed so easily.
Wow. Yeah.
And I think because we all have issues with conflict, and often we kind of struggle with it on our own and learn our lessons the hard way. And to suddenly be in a group where you can exchange your experiences and some wisdom is a great, people welcome it as a wonderful opportunity. What we found is that people maybe learn some lessons or skills in one context, but they don't necessarily transfer those into another context. So maybe they've, through major struggle, have learned how to deal with their teenage daughter and that relationship, but they may not necessarily take that experience into the workplace.
Mm-hmm.
And in the workplace, suddenly have a different conflict style, much more adversarial or conflictual, and they don't really make the connection between the different kinds of conflict. And what we encourage people to see or to sort of think about is the connection between the different kinds of conflict. And that whether you're dealing with a one-on-one issue in an immediate kind of family environment, quite a lot of the same fears, mechanisms, and issues take place for larger, bigger, more complex mm-hmm. issues as well.
Now, what you just said, Carol, suggests that there's a lot in common with various types of conflict, whether it's dealing with your teenager or dealing with your mm-hmm. boss at work or a subordinate at work or a peer in a social situation. You know, it certainly suggests that there are certain aspects of conflict that transcend all of that. I'm wondering if you could offer a basic definition or an explanation of what is conflict?
I think, you know, there are parallels in all these situations because you're always dealing with human beings and you're always dealing with human beings' fears and basic needs for safety, for a sense of identity, for a sense of being acknowledged. And when we feel threatened in our very basic needs, that's where we can respond negatively to a challenge or to a difference of opinion, and a conflict can degenerate to something that becomes destructive. And I believe this can be true in a sort of day-to-day environment or from one community to another, or one nation to the other. But we're very careful not to, again, sort of push our own thinking or sort of lecture people. We let people bring out their own insights and their own conclusions. Mm-hmm. Sometimes the conversation remains a very kind of personal exchange on how people deal with their own conflicts. Some other times the group is interested in kind of larger issues and how as a society we deal with conflict. And so they move as a group to discussing larger issues, but we don't push them one way or another. And we certainly are very careful not to take position, but rather play the role of the facilitator.
And when we're asked the question that you did, what mm-hmm. is conflict?
Right.
Generally, we throw it back to them. What do you think it is? Because that's the most important piece, is we each come with our own different version of what it is, and that's what's most important to us in the conversation, mm-hmm. is
Got
how
it.
We deal
Got
with
it.
Whatever
yeah.
that is for us.
I think, but as conflict resolution practitioner, I think we sort of, where we come from, let's say, is that conflict is a natural part of life,
mm-hmm.
and that it's not necessarily a bad thing as long as you embrace it and work with it. And that if you try to ignore it or if you don't manage it in a proactive way, that's when it will turn destructive and can have enormous, very high cost and bad consequences.
Well, in just a minute, I'd like to share the first clip I have from a conversation I had recently with mm-hmm. someone who recently attended one of your conversations. And before we do so, though, I was wondering if you could make some comments in general about, you know, what is the spirit of a conversation about conflict like? I mean, what is the kind of the tone or the spirit of the conversation?
Well, one of the things that Carol said in response to your question about people feeling uncomfortable comes to mind for me, and that's this sense of I'm not alone, you know, because as she said, we tend to feel like we have to deal with our own issues,
mm-hmm.
and there's a real sense of community that almost develops in a conversation, mm-hmm. because you realize that everyone else is experiencing some kind of similar circumstance, and the conversations are, as I think as we talked about before, it's really directed by the participants for the most part, and it, you know, what they want to share and what is important to them and where they need to go with the conversation. So it's a real free-flowing, upbeat. I mean, most people leave, and at the end when we ask them what you got out of it, they feel very hopeful. They feel energized. They feel like they're walking away with some valuable tools and some real insights. I mean, and I can give you some examples of some comments folks have made.
Great. We'll look forward to those in a little while. And just out of curiosity, how long are these conversations?
They can be from, some have been had to be shortened to a sort of 1 hour format. I would say it's a kind of minimum amount of time that you need to engage, and it goes up to 2 hours. So it depends. I mean, we host these conversations just about everywhere. We've had them on university campuses. We've had in people's living rooms, people just inviting friends. We've had it in community centers, in workplaces, in churches.
So it's not like you have to take a whole day out of your schedule to participate.
No,
it
works well as a brown bag as well. And so an hour and a half, 2 hours. And again, you know, it will be quite different depending on the audience, the time of day, and the sort of kind of participants that are there.
Interesting. Well, we're going to go ahead and listen to the first interview with Carrie Keller, and she attended one. Do you remember her?
Yes, absolutely.
Which conversation? Where was
that? Was in Washington. That was in Washington, and it was actually in Carrie's living room. She'd kind of invited me. She got in touch with me. She got in touch, and she offered to host a conversation at her house, and sort of brought a whole lot of friends, and we had a very nice evening. And then I gave you her name because I remember her getting back to me afterwards and sort of talking about what she got out of it. So,
well, and we're going to find out right now what she did get out of it. So here we go with Carrie Keller.
Hi, Carrie. How are you doing?
I'm doing good.
Great. I understand you recently participated in a conversation about conflict.
I did. I participate in a mentoring group of women in their various career stages. And so when I learned about the Conversations About Conflict series, I invited that group of women to get together to experience a conversation.
So what was the dialogue like? What was the conversation like? Was it really structured? Was it
was it
uncomfortable? What was it like?
It was informal. There was some structure to it, but just enough to keep a dialogue going and to keep it interesting.
What did it seem like the goals of the evening were?
To raise awareness on an individual level.
Mm-hmm.
The dialogue really asked us, each one of us, to kind of consider what we believed.
And after having this reflection and raising your awareness and having kind of a better understanding of how you viewed conflict and how it affected your personal life, did this result in any actual changes in your personal life?
Yes, it did. One of the tools that I took from the dialogue were the propositions at the end.
Mm-hmm. Tell us about that.
Well, there are five of them, and they were really easy for me to bundle up and take with me. And there, that conflict is a normal part of life. It's neither positive nor negative. It offers a choice. We can learn how to better deal with it, and that we can each make a difference.
Mm-hmm.
And so I kind of was able to tighten that in my head after the dialogue and really apply it later. I was in a situation with a contractor. I was in the process of doing some collaborating with a contractor on the rehabilitation of a house, and we were very, very behind schedule, and I was getting very anxious, and I was beginning to see the problem as the contractor, and that was making it very personal rather than it being just a business situation that could be handled, that we could creatively problem solve around. And I remember showing up to meet him and expecting a deadline to be met. And it wasn't. And I remember just thinking immediately, I need to take a deep breath. And I pulled from my toolbox those five propositions and thought, yeah, this can turn out better. I know what the outcome is that I want. And blowing off steam and making him feel bad isn't going to get me that outcome. So I said, give me a second. You know, I left the house, kind of did a 360 walk around it, collected my thoughts, and went back up and was able to reach the outcome that I wanted to with him without making it personal.
Fundamentally, what do you believe you did differently than you would have otherwise?
I really focused in on that third proposition of conflict offers a choice, and I was able to mentally move very quickly from adversarial to finding the common ground. And the common ground was that we both wanted to get the job done.
Mm-hmm.
So I was able to really make that transition quickly, and I was tickled about it because it really relieved me of anxiety, and it took us to a different level in the project and in our relationship. Instead of kind of tear down the relationship, it actually built a little bit more trust.
Mm-hmm. How did the contractor react to...
He was surprised.
Mm-hmm. Surprised that you didn't yell at him?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly, because I really had the impulse, and I was about to let go when I realized that the deadline hadn't been met. But I think he realized when I said, give me a minute, that I was really trying to make a switch. I don't think he really knew how I was going to do it, or even if I was going to be successful, but I could see him reacting to that step back.
Wow, that is really a great story and so simple.
Yeah, yeah, it really was. Those five propositions, keeping them in mind, you know, I don't think of them as rules. I just thought of them as tools,
mm-hmm.
you know, that I could really rely on. And if I could keep them in my head in any situation, I could really quickly move from a personal adversarial position to one in which the person and I are focused on an issue, mm-hmm. not each other.
And I really want to emphasize for our listeners that this was not an in-depth training for you, correct? This was a conversation to bring out these ideas in yourself, and you made a decision on how you wanted to act on that. It wasn't an actual training on how to behave, correct?
Yeah, exactly. It was an hour and a half discussion. And I think that was what was really powerful about it, was the emphasis on reflection.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's what enabled me to really walk away and with a tool that I could personalize.
Mm-hmm.
I just think that at the very end of the day, it's about how one human being communicates to another. And no matter where you are, everybody needs tools for that, to be able to accomplish their goals, I guess.
Well, and there's nothing like a real-world, real-life example to bring that out and to illustrate that point. So thanks so much for sharing your experience with us, and I wish you the best of luck.
Thanks.
So how about that?
Well, it's very nice to hear that kind of feedback. And I must say, if that's what people get out of it, then we feel that, you know, we've made a contribution. If people can transform some relationships and some conflicts that they're involved in, or even have a conversation with their family and friends that they never had before, sort of saying, hey, mm-hmm. you know, today I've kind of thought about, I've had this conversation about conflict, I thought about how I deal with conflict, and I realize I'm not always very good at it, and I'd like us to, in the future, deal with it in a more constructive manner, and sort of speak about it in a way that they never have, then I think that's already we've accomplished a great deal. And a lot of people out of the conversation also then get interested in getting more involved, getting more training. Like you said, this is not a training. You know, you can get conflict resolution training in many different places, or you can become a mediator yourself, or bring an issue that you are intending to take to trial, take it to mediation. So we acted a little bit as a referral. But really what I think where our heart is to touch people's lives, to get them thinking a little bit differently. And we feel that again, it always starts with the personal, and that if enough people start thinking about these issues and starts gaining a new awareness, then we can start having maybe a cultural change where, as a general society, we can learn how to deal with our conflicts and our differences in a more constructive way.
And, you know, that can seem like such a huge ambition to work towards, but, you know, what really struck me about what Carrie just shared was how simple her intervention, if you will, was. It wasn't that she did anything complicated based on in-depth training. She had an awareness that she didn't have before, and based on that awareness, she made a choice. And it was a choice not necessarily to do something, but to withhold from what would have otherwise been a natural impulse to yell at somebody, which is very, you know, it's natural for us to feel that way, but she was able to act on that new awareness.
Absolutely, and I think like all things, you know, the very essence is simple. And I've personally given a lot of training, mediation training, mm-hmm. and I found that a lot of people would love the training, and then they go back to their normal environment, which isn't necessarily supportive of what they've learned. They try it out, and then it fails. They try their little trick, and it doesn't work, and they decide, oh, well, conflict resolution doesn't work. And I think what is more important than learning the skills of the process is to gain a new awareness. And every conflict resolution training starts with a little bit of a conversation about conflict, but moves very quickly into skills and tools, when I think that's a crucial part, is that, you know, to be able to embrace and manage conflict requires quite a shift. A lot of us have quite a negative connotation with conflict due to past experiences that have been painful, or role models in our family that we're not necessarily the best one to follow. And so more than the skills and the tools, which are important, but I think more than that, you need to shift in the awareness and the attitudes. And that, you know, that you gain through reflecting and gaining insight and sharing and a conversation.
Just real quick, the other thing that struck me with what Carrie said was it wasn't just about her. I mean, her actions really transformed a relationship with somebody. By that, especially when one expects you to yell at him and you don't, how transformative that can be.
Absolutely.
Yeah. What a gift you make to someone. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I was just going to add, the conversations can be fun. You know,
I
mean, this sounds like a very, you know, serious, and it is. And there, you know, a lot of the conversation is serious, but most of the conversations have lots of laughter in them because we can relate to experiences of people. And one conflict resolution center had a staff meeting just recently, and I did a conversation there. And when we talked about, you know, what's an early experience that you had of conflict, one of the women said, talked about how she, someone was playing with a game that she wanted, and she kicked her in the her friend in the stomach, you know, to get it back. She hadn't really thought about that in a very long time. It just came up because we asked the question, and then she started thinking about it and how it has affected. You know, she's a street fighter. She kind of likes to go at it, get it out there, and then the next day, you know, have it handled and work through it, and then they were friends after that. So she had a positive response to that. And so her staff, you know, her other colleagues now had a better insight on actually how she interacted with them sometimes in a more aggressive way, and could better understand that it wasn't personal against them. It was just kind of her natural style. So I think even just understanding how we normally do things and what prompts us to do that is the key to actually then having a choice. And I think she will be making some different choices because she really got it, you know?
What are some other benefits that can come out of these conversations? What kind of results have you been getting, other types of feedback, other realized benefits?
Mm-hmm. It's a little bit difficult to really track that much. We should actually go back to people, you know, 2 weeks and 2 months or whatever afterwards, which we're not able to always do. This is quite a modest little project. But, I mean, we get sometimes stories like such as Carrie of transform relationship. We have people sort of getting an interest in the field or wanting to learn the skills, as I said, or getting involved one way or another. I think what is important for us is that a lot of people leave the conversation feeling quite inspired and hopeful. And I think conflict resolution has a lot to offer. It doesn't give an answer to people, but for a lot of people who feel quite disempowered and feeling that they can't make a difference in the world, conflict resolution can provide you with better ways of getting to answers in a way. And I think a lot of people leave the conversation sort of feeling better about what's possible and perhaps
about finding their own answers, not expecting it to have to come from somebody
else,
right?
Yeah, and some examples. A young woman she and her boyfriend were talking about moving out of town someplace far away, and their parents were upset about it, very upset about it. And in the conversation, she actually got to step into her parents' shoes a little bit and find and really understand why they were upset about them leaving, and be able to have a conversation with them about why they felt they needed to, and address the issue about the loss that they were feeling and how much that she was going to continue to keep in touch. And, you know, so there was a real shift, because when you're in it, you know, when you're right in the smack dab in the middle of it, it's hard to see kind of outside. A psychotherapist who participated in a conversation, she's been in the field for 20 years, had one of those aha moments during the conversation where a light bulb goes off, and there was something that had kept gnawing at her, and she kind of had some level of understanding of it, but she said it just, you know, the conversation just smack dab in her face. It came up, and she really then had a commitment to altering, you know, that, because she really understood it at a whole new level. Mm. Go ahead.
Oh, we've had a conversation here with one of the several representative of the ANCs, Advisory Neighborhood mm-hmm. Commissions, and they use some case studies of their relationship with some sort of city officials and how it gets more and more adversarial and tense, and we were able to work through those situations and get them to see that maybe by sort of making it escalate more and more, it wasn't going to get them what they wanted. And I haven't gone back to check what has happened with the, I think it was the Department of Transport or something. Mm. But, I mean, it sort of got them feeling positive again about what they were dealing with and give them new avenues and to try and new tools to try. And again, the tools we provide in just this one conversation are very limited. They're more kind of a few thoughts. But I think that's also maybe what is powerful is yeah. that people then can own it, like Harry said, and just yeah. try it out themselves.
Yeah, there was a graduate student who, in one of the conversations, he was my partner in part of it, you know, and he was talking about this consistent problem that he had with a partner of his in business. They were in a little business, and he had a you know, it was a constant, the same thing every time came up, and it was almost on a daily basis. And so he really, in the conversation, he said, wow, I can have this kind of conversation with my partner, you know, and he went back and had the conversation with the partner, you know, and there was like a shift in how people, in how, in relationships, as you all said before, you know, because, you know, he was able to step back and look and make a change.
Wow. I'd like to share one more clip in a moment from another participant of one of your recent conversations. But before we do that, I'd just like to ask you some kind of basic questions to help paint a picture more about this. Where are these conversations held?
Like, wherever we invite us, quite frankly. the perfect or the ideal number for a conversation is about 15 people, we found. Mm-hmm. More than that, it becomes a bit too big. Some people don't fully participate and engage. So we sort of look out for groups of that kind of size that we can that can host a conversation. As I said, in university campus, we've had one actually at George Mason, and we came mm-hmm. to one of your class and did one there. We've had in Georgetown. We haven't done so many with younger kids, I think, because it's quite a intellectual concept. So it's sort of not really that well suited for kids, although we're thinking about adapting the format for a younger audience. We've hosted it in churches. It works well in churches.
Synagogues, you know, interfaith group.
It works well. I mean, the one kind of particular group we've approached with the idea, with the proposal, was the conflict resolution community itself and places like local mediation centers, because they have a need to have their work and their services better understood and better known. And they very seldom do any kind of public education work. And this is one tool, one workshop that they can use to offer to the community. And that can be an introduction to what they have to offer. And so we come in and we train people, and then they go and facilitate their own conversation, and they can make it a regular offering of their center. Same thing for individual kind of consultants or mediators. Hosting these conversations can be a way of getting themselves better known as a resource, a conflict resolution resource in their community.
But I just want to add that you don't have to be a conflict resolution professional to really facilitate these conversations. We have people of all walks of life who facilitate. And, you know, if any of your listeners are interested, we certainly could get them hooked into attending a conversation and seeing what it's all about, and then actually train them in facilitation, which is a very, you know, very easy kind of next step.
Where could people go to find that information?
Well, they would just have to contact Search for Common Ground and myself as an outreach person there. My name is Carol Frampton, so you can give my phone number and email address at the end of the show. I think that's the best way. And then Kate is kind of coordinates a lot of the activities, and we start new groups. I mean, this is all driven by volunteers, and it's all It's all volunteer based, and it's you know, if it's an idea whose time has come, it will grow and it will take off. If people feel resonate with the idea, if it meets a need and interest in people, it will grow. If it doesn't, it won't, because it relies on people sort of saying, "Wow, this is something important," mm-hmm. like a carry, mm-hmm. and say, "This conversation is worthwhile. Let me help you organize it, because mm-hmm. we can't organize it ill."
One thing they might want to do is look on the website, which is www.cgpartnership.com.
Not org.
Oh, dot org. Yes, dot org. Sorry.
dot
org.
I'm sure you could Google Common Ground Partnership, Conversation About Conflict.
Yes. You can also access it through the Search for Common Ground main website, as it is an initiative that was started by Search for Common
Ground.
And
for our regular listeners, there's actually already a link up on www.conflictradio.org to the CG Partnership, so you can go right there to find more. We're going to go ahead now, and would you like to hear another clip?
Yes,
sure.
Okay, another. I'm not going to tell you if it's good or bad, but well, I guess you could guess. Well, certainly, this apparently has been spreading throughout the country, you know, despite a lack of overwhelming resources to make that happen. Mm. But certainly, conversations have been taking place in cities all over the United States, and who knows, maybe it could expand farther in the near future.
It doesn't take much to organize one. I mean, mm-hmm. it takes commitment. It takes a bit of energy and time. But other than that, it's not something that requires a lot of resources or mm-hmm. anything like that.
Well, we're going to listen now to an interview I had actually just this morning with Flavia Finning up in New York. If I understand, she attended a conversation over the summer, and then decided to bring it to her university and make it happen there.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. Correct? So we're going to go ahead and hear some reflections from her on that.
My name is Flavia Finning. I'm a graduate student for the counseling program at Hofstra University. And my professor, Dr. Lori Johnson, is very much involved in conflict resolution, peer mediation. And her and I went to a training at John Jay College over the summer about conversations, about conflicts, and we're trained in it. And we thought it would be a good idea to bring it to Hofstra University for the students there to kind of get involved. And I participated in the conversation with my peers.
And what was that experience like for you?
It was very interesting to hear how people handle conflicts and, you know, what are people's coping skills? What are people's defense mechanisms? What are people's first reactions when they're being engaged in a conflict? And what are people's perceptions of what a conflict is? And I felt it was very interesting. Many of the people in my program are very open, very willing to share their life experiences and how it's actually shaped how they view conflict.
And so for you, it was interesting or helpful to actually hear others' perceptions and how they deal with conflict.
Yes, it was. It really was. And myself also to share. And as I've been thinking about this since the first training over the summer, it was great, another chance for me to explore deeper my feelings on how I've been handling conflict. What are some of the ways that it would make it better for me to handle conflict, and as well as, you know, how that impacts other people in my life.
After this brief conversation, facilitated dialogue, has this had any effect on your life, or can you see how it may change things for you?
Absolutely. I think it opened my eyes to, you know, trying other ways. You know, if something's not working for you, you know, it's helpful to try and change it so that it does. And so I think this gave me insight into, you know, that there are other avenues out there to resolve conflict in, you know, a non-threatening, non-violent, more of a peaceful way, so that it's a win-win situation and that both people feel like they've been respected, their sides have been heard. And even though you may not agree, it's okay that, you know, there can be some form of balance between two sides.
What do you think it was about this conversation that helped bring that out for you?
I think there are a couple of factors. I think that the people that were there were very interested in being there and kind of exploring the whole realm of conflict and conflict resolution.
I think the facilitator played a key role in helping move the conversation along in a non-threatening way and making people, you know, feel respected. Some of the things that you would want to do in resolving a conflict, you know, letting everyone feel as though their voice matters, their opinion counts, and really truly listening to what people have to say. And I just think the whole group dynamic, being in a relaxed setting and just, you know, kind of having what it is really having a conversation about conflict. You know, how do you deal with conflict? What are some of the ways you cope with conflict, and how does it impact your life?
After sitting through this and experiencing this with you and your peers, have any of you decided or expressed any interest in facilitating any of these yourself?
People have expressed interest. The training now, we're graduating to become school counselors, and it's my hope, and you know, I can speak to myself, that it is my hope that I'll be able to institute something like this in the school where I'll be working with children, you know, being that I think that, you know, they're our future, and if we're going to, you know, make changes, we should start with them. So I think that, you know, I'm definitely planning on facilitating some type of conversation once I actually get into, you know, settled into a school setting and working with the kids.
Wonderful. Well, that sounds very exciting, and I certainly wish you the best of luck. And thank you so much for spending the time with us today, Flavia.
Thank you, Sean, for having me.
If you can narrow it down to one thing that people generally leave these conversations with, and we've heard both from Kelly and Flavia about how it's impressed them, and certainly in many ways, but if there's something in common you think that all people tend to leave the conversation with, what would that be?
I think we sort of have one visual image that stays with people, at least for people who are quite visual like myself, it's very helpful. And we just show, when we talk about the choice that we have when faced with a conflict, we've got this kind of two little, how do you call it?
Diagrams
of two people sort of facing one another. And when you see the other person as the problem, mm-hmm. you know, if only my husband wasn't the way he is, or if only my colleague was pulling his or her weight, or the other person is the problem. And then we show the two people this time standing next to one another and then facing the issue. And the issue may be, well, how do we have, you know, how do we manage our maybe housework together, or how do we get this project together as colleagues? And you sort of look at the other person as not the source of the problem, but as your partner in dealing with the issue at hand. And I think these two, they see very quite clearly these two choices, and a lot of people sort of find that quite useful, because when they're faced with the next problem and the next conflict, if they have just 1 second to catch themselves before they blow up, that might be that choice or that diagram that comes up for them. And maybe the another important thing is at the end, when we talk a little bit about our conflict culture and people sort of coming to the conclusion that it again, it's the personal that matters. And if we all shift the way we deal with our conflicts and differences at the individual level, then we can maybe shift it at a, if we get to a critical mass or the tipping point or whatever you call it, we can have a larger impact.
And it's, you know, like any trend, it starts with one or two sure. kind of offbeat people, and they, you know, some other folks join them, and then it starts growing and growing, and then all of a sudden it's the norm. So that's really what our vision is, in a very simplified way of how we deal with conflict, that it will shift from our normal kind of adversarial approach, someone wins and someone loses, to a situation where both parties can be satisfied at the end.
And you know, I mean, this is just one small contribution yes. to what is much bigger and are happening already. I mean, just the fact that you have a radio show yeah. that is called Conflict that yeah. maybe wouldn't have happened not so long ago. The fact that you now have 600 universities throughout the United States that do offer conflict resolution programs, that's also very new. The fact that you have more and more courts that appoint mediators instead of, you know, for cases where the relationship is important. In the business sector, you see also more and more sort of ADR or alternative dispute resolution processes or conflict resolution programs. In schools, you have peer mediation programs. So this is a sort of movement that is happening, but it needs encouragement. It needs more awareness, and it needs to be better known by the general public. Mm-hmm. Conflict resolution, at the moment, I feel, is still a little bit of a fringe field that speaks a little bit of a jargon and that the general public is not sufficiently aware of. And we're just trying to bring out peace to that.
Well, you know, I certainly wouldn't undermine or underestimate the value of your efforts here because, you know, of all those things you mentioned, all these, you know, conflict resolution trainings and certifications and processes out there, you know, those are kind of, you know, skills-based trainings. They're perhaps, you know, intimidating to some people or, you know, there's no doubt. I mean, it's wonderful to know and to hear about it, but this idea of raising awareness, I think, is just so crucial.
Yeah.
And clearly the examples so far that we've talked about really illustrate that.
And it's about really having a conversation about the real issue. Because you look at all the different conflicts, with, you know, the big ones like the small one, whatever the issue is, at the end of the day, it's become violent because the two parties or the people involved didn't know how to resolve their difference in a non-violent, in a cooperative manner. So
it's not that they wouldn't if they had a choice. It's just they didn't know. They didn't know what that choice was.
Yeah. So, you know, we focus so much on the issues, the issue of, you know, religious conflicts or ethnic conflicts or race issues. But I feel that underneath that, there's a more core issue is how do we deal with sometimes scarce resources, differences of opinions, the huge diversity and the beautiful diversity that we have. How do we deal with it in a way that when we disagree or when we have conflicting opinions or needs, we can resolve those without resorting to violence and in a way that will strengthen relationship rather than damage it?
Yeah, that they become an opportunity rather than something, a negative experience. And one of the things that I think is the beauty about the conversation about conflict that folks have given me feedback on is its simplicity, as you were saying. I mean, because it is so simple, it's so down to earth, it's so normal, it's so kind of natural, it hits on things that people talk about every day. You know, they can relate to all of the questions.
And
that
you can
we
see the
post.
Effects almost immediately. I mean, almost literally walking out of the room and seeing the world through a different lens.
Yeah.
Well, I got to tell you, you know, this is just a fascinating conversation right here, and I can imagine going on for hours. The clock is rapidly winding down, and I want to make sure that we share with our listeners some information about how they can get involved, either as a participant in a conversation or if anyone out there is interested in perhaps facilitating these dialogues.
Okay, well, first, check out the website.
CGPartnership.org.
And I will say that again. Yeah, CGPartnership.org.
It's a very modest little website, but it will give them the information that they need.
It gives you some information. There's also an email address, info@partnership. CGPartnership.org. Sorry, I don't have it all memorized. But anyway, and you can send us an email or contact Carol. She'll give you her number and let us know of your interest. If you have a group that you're working with, you know, some friends. I saw a lot of Boost Outside, some organizations that actually it might be a really good opportunity for.
And you mentioned earlier you don't need a high level of training to actually facilitate one of these dialogues, but are there any requirements for facilitators?
Yeah, first you need to attend one.
I suppose.
You need to be a participant. And then after that, we have a short facilitator training. We provide materials, and we talk to you about what's required as a facilitator. Very little. You need to give us some feedback afterwards. But then we'd like to recommend that you co-facilitate with someone who's done it before, and we'll provide support from an experienced facilitator to new folks who want to do it themselves. Because, you know, our intention is to kind of like spread it out there. We don't want to be doing them all ourselves. We really want other people involved.
And this is all free, correct?
Absolutely. Oh, yeah. No, it has to be free. It's just a conversation. You can't charge for a conversation.
You never know. This is the United States.
We're an NGO. But just to add to that, I mean, we we try to give support to the people who sort of jump in and mm-hmm. become facilitators. So Kate is a wonderful coach, and she's in sort of telephone contact with all the different people in the different cities. Because we've got very limited resources and we can't always go to where there are interested groups or individuals, if there's someone who's got a lot of experience as a facilitator, and we sometimes also just send them the facilitator's guide and sort of walk through the guide with them over the phone and sort of give them support like this. I mean, we have to be flexible in how we want this idea to be out there, and different people will take it on in different ways.
Mm. Great. Well, on that note, I think we'll wrap it up here, and I just want to thank you both so very much, Carol Frampton.
Thank you very much. It's been fun.
It's been a pleasure having you here, and perhaps you can come back in a few months and let us know how it's going.
That would be great.
Sounds good.
Fantastic.
And perhaps we'll have a few conversations here.
Well, you never know. That sounds like a good idea to me. Who knows? Maybe we could do one on the air. Is that a possibility? We might have to talk about that.
I mean, you'd have to find a group of 10, 15 people who are willing to share a few of their personal stories on it, but
you never know.
Yeah,
you never know.
It's a possibility. Or we might could have one taped, and then they're anonymous.
Yeah.
Great.
Yeah.
Well, again, thanks so much for joining us today. Well, folks, next week on Conflict, the Internet and Conflict Resolution. Join us next Tuesday from 3 to 4 p.m. Eastern Standard Time right here on WGMU, 650 a.m., GMU Cable Channel 22, and worldwide at WGMUradio.com. As always, for more information and links regarding today's program, or to hear today's or previously broadcasted shows, visit www.conflictradio.org. Thanks again to our guests today, Carol Frampton and Kate Levanch. I'm Sean Dunning. Thanks for listening, and I'll see you next week.